Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Well, all I have to say is welcome back. Welcome back for myself as well. It's been a long summer, a long hot summer, as I've stated. And I've kind of missed doing the show, but I've been kind of preoccupied with work and stuff. So it's kind of taken away from my time. Coming here and talking about the stuff, which is about childhood sexual abuse, of course, and about my own healing recovery and what we do here at the Gatehouse. And tonight I have a really, really fantastic guest, Darren, sitting right here beside me. Hi, Darren.
Hey,
well, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you, man.
And we got some really, really great conversation and some, you know, and all I have to say to you is if you're listening live right now, just stay tuned in. But first off, I need to get this little announcement out of the way right now. And Darren's going to elaborate on that a little bit more later on, which I'm looking forward to. But we'll get to that. But right now, I am at the Gatehouse, which is at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West in Toronto, or Old Etobicoke, as I always say. We've been around for 21 years helping survivors of childhood sexual abuse, both men and women. And we also have a childhood investigation center here as well, which has been in place for many, many years as well. Which the Toronto police use, Toronto, and also Peel Police have used it from time to time as well. So we are very, very structured and centered right here in the city and very community-focused throughout the – well, actually not just in the city, but actually internationally now, if you want to talk about Gatehouse International. But we have a fundraiser that's coming up, which I want to mention, which is on the fourth – or actually it's our fourth annual Healing the Voice Within fundraiser. We have a lot of great guests, but if you are interested in coming – I won't get into the guests right now because I want to come back to it right – later on, because there's actually a lot of people around here that I mentioned, but I'm going to come back to it. And not only that, but I think Darren's going to do something about that and just listen closely. But this fundraiser is very important. I've gone to the last three, and we've raised an awful lot of money for the Gatehouse. You got to remember, we are a nonprofit organization. So therefore, we rely on public funds to keep us going. We don't get any funds from the government to run the place. We rely totally on donations to keep the place going. And amazingly, we've been going for 21 years.
That's awesome.
And we've had probably almost 30,000 people come through the house and all that time. So that's incredible. But anyway, our fundraiser will be a Thursday, October the 3rd. And you can call the Gatehouse at 416-255-5900. Or you can go right on the website, thegatehouse.org, and you'll see all the details there. And if you don't want to talk to a human being, you can just do it all right from there, which is for some people that it works out well. But folks, I have Darren here beside me. I want to get right to the show because we have lots of good stuff to talk about. It's been a long summer, like I said, and I'm so happy to be back here. Welcome. Thank you for coming, Darren.
Thank you, Stuart. It's good to be here. The last time I was here, I was doing phase one, and I was actually I was getting some outside help treatment with CAMH for depression. I was doing a thing called RTMS,
yes,
which repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation. And I think I was in my third course of that at CAMH, and I talked to one of the psychiatrists there, and I just said, like, I need some more help, and I don't know where to get it. And she gave me a list of places, and the Gatehouse was one of them. And so I got my transportation hooked up because I'm from Guelph,
yeah,
right? And I started doing phase one. Actually, I wasn't able to finish it because of the transportation, the wear and tear that
you're coming quite a piece. You're over an hour away.
Yeah, it was a long drive, yeah, in and out. So it wasn't only draining physically, but it was also emotionally. Like, I didn't really want to have any kind of, like, you know, meaningless conversation with the driver on the way home or the way here.
Yeah.
And say, like, what I'm going to do. Like, I wanted to save that for actually being in the program and talking about it. And so anyways, but I will say that the time that I did get to experience the group process with other survivors, it was very healing. There was a lot of you know, really heavy emotions from all the guys in the group, and at that point I had I think I'd already seen, I'd already seen Theo Fleury live,
mm-hmm,
at Bingaman's in Kitchener, Ontario, and that's when I first went public. And shortly afterwards, I started doing the phase one here.
So, within you telling us this as well, so what was it like growing up for you, and then and realizing that you were messed up, that you had the you had figured out that, well, you needed help. Well, what brought you to that?
Yeah, well, basically, like, what happened was I was okay. So my family moved from Australia to Canada. And my older half brother is my abuser. And, so for me, it's child sibling sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And it basically went on for a couple of years, and, my mom walked in on it happening, one time at, this cabin that we were staying at, which was kind of like a halfway stop between where we lived and my father's childhood cottage. So we were essentially going to my father's, you know, childhood experiences. And I think in a lot of ways, my father was kind of revisiting his own childhood trauma, which is kind of ironic because at the same time I was experiencing my own childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, when the abuse was discovered, it was dealt with, now the way I see it, it was dealt with in the best way that my mother knew how to deal with it. And really, she didn't know how to deal with it. And because of her own childhood trauma and stuff like that, things that she disclosed to me later on in my life that helped me to kind of understand how she reacted to that situation. Mm-hmm. And so I was just kind of, it was just kind of swept under the rug. And I was sort of just told that it was, you know, that children sexually experiment, and that that was just what that was.
Do you remember how old you were?
Yeah, I was 9 years old when it was discovered. And my older half brother was 15. It started when I was 7, so he would have been 13. And later on, I also found out that, because I confronted him when I was a teenager, because it was a secret for the longest time. Yeah. My younger brothers didn't know about it. And my older half brother had called the one day, and, you know, I confronted him about it. I said, like, what happened between us? Like, what you did, like, you know, it was really messed up, man. And he called me back and basically started to weep on the phone and tell me that basically deny what he had done to me, and also to go ahead and say that he was also abused. So it's like, it's just this big cycle of silence and sexual abuse. And I'm just glad that I can be a whistleblower and a buck stopper. And I'm not doing any of this to try to paint my older half brother or my parents or my other two younger siblings as, you know, as the bad guy or as bad people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just laying out the truth of mm-hmm. what happened and how it was dealt with and how it's still, you know, not being dealt with from the other side, as far as I see it.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. And that's a really, really hard thing for someone to have to go through and to have to go back now, especially as an adult. I couldn't imagine. I've never gone confronted my abusers from the past.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'll ever have that opportunity, but
yeah.
That's awesome that you were able to voice as where you probably didn't have that voice before, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Even at that young age.
Yeah, at that young age, like, I didn't. And shortly afterwards, see, my mother was in a relationship prior to meeting my father, mm. so my older half brother was always kind of playing the card of, like, you know, you're not my dad to
yeah.
my actual dad. And
yeah.
so it was decided that they were going to, that he was going to be flown out of the country back to Australia.
Yeah.
And my father told me that he was very adamant against that happening because there was all kinds of other options that they could look into pursuing without sending him back.
Mm.
And, but basically, the way that I see it now is that, you know, my mother protected him from facing the consequences of what he did to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they never looked into, my mother and father never looked into, was there any other circumstances that happened? Was this an isolated incident?
Mm-hmm.
Where did my older half brother get this kind of behavior from in the first place.
Learned behavior?
Yeah, because this isn't something that kids just make up,
no,
right?
No, it's not. No.
And so I was later given the information by my older half brother that he was abused. And then actually shortly after he was flown back to Australia, my Nana contacted us and told us that this guy in Australia was actually convicted for abusing young kids at this church in Australia. And the kids were from ages 4 to 7. I looked all this up because my dad gave me the name of the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up on the MACO list.
Yeah.
In Australia, which is a list of registered child murderers and sex offenders. And sure enough, the guy's name was there. And it said children from ages 4 to 7, and that he had to serve a certain amount of time. And that was pretty much it, right? So I don't know. I don't think that he got to me,
mm-hmm.
but he definitely, like, and here's the thing is, like, I've tried to get the information from my family about, was this the guy that abused my older half brother? Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten a clear, straight answer from anybody about it, but I kind of look at the situation and go, like, it's obvious. We went to that church.
Yeah.
My brother was between 4 and 7.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy got convicted, you know, and so.
All the signs are there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And like through the years, like even after that, so it kind of just went kind of dormant after that. Like after you mentioned it, it went quiet.
Well, what happened is actually my older half brother was talking with my parents about coming back to Canada for
mm-hmm.
a visit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going ballistic because I just, you know, I was full of like all kinds of pent up rage
mm-hmm.
and everything about the whole situation. And then I was being basically my mother was, you know, attacking me for saying like, you won't let me see my son
mm.
and kind of thing. And I'm kind of going like, are you serious? Like, here's the reasons why,
mm.
you know what I mean? Like, so it was just kind of this, like this, the family I grew up in was a very, like, it was very like victim based, you know what I mean? It's like, everybody's a victim. Everyone's pointing fingers at the
yeah.
next person and nobody really wants to man up and take responsibility and you know, and face the music, face the realities of what happened.
Mm.
And there was many times when you know, when I would go to talk to my mother about the situation, and she would just say that you know, it wasn't abuse, it was just, you know, sexual experimentation. And every time that happened, it was just like another brick in the wall between me and my mother. And I can remember distinctly saying to her at times, like, I feel like I've never had a real relationship with you. And the reality is that when that incident happened when I was little, that's pretty much where the major wall went up. Because how can I trust somebody that didn't protect me
mm-hmm.
and then also didn't, you know,
stand up for you?
Yeah, stand up for me and deal with the situation, right?
Mm. Yeah, that must have been really, really difficult.
Yeah. It has been very difficult. And, you know, I've been processing this with outside help, with therapy,
mm-hmm.
with counseling for a long time. And I've been pursuing recovery from, because I started to deal with the pain when I was a teenager with all kinds of addiction.
Oh yeah.
Like I realized that I started out, basically with a traumatized childhood. And from that, I developed codependence. And then that was the grounds for developing all kinds of addictions like alcoholism, drug addiction, nicotine addiction.
You name it, right?
What's that?
You name it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much everything. Food addiction, like just anything to really, like,
numb
you
the
know,
pain.
Yeah, just numb the pain.
Yeah. I could totally relate to that. You know,
yeah.
From my own experiences, numbing the pain was, well, I did it for so long and so many years.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think my body's in shock after I stopped most of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I didn't give it all up, but the bad things, the really bad things,
yeah.
I had to give up because
yeah.
it just, well, talk about talk about not having control over your life. I mean, I can still have a coffee and a smoke and not get in trouble or lose my, you know, but I give up everything else.
Yeah.
But realizing that, what this other stuff was doing to me, the alcohol and the cocaine and all that stuff was just killing me.
Alcohol and cocaine for me too. I just
killing me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I just celebrated 6 years actually clean and sober.
Well done, man. Well done. Well done.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, this June I celebrated 6 years, and actually earlier this year I celebrated 3 years nicotine free, because for me,
for me,
that was, I have asthma, and also as a rap artist, like,
you need your lungs.
I need my lungs.
You need your lungs.
You know, and so I mean, like, I celebrated 3 years, and both of those, all those addictions were incredibly tough to face, and yeah, it's just as soon as I had the conviction that that I really had to face this, and I had to I don't want to say cut ties with my family, because that implies that there's never going to be reconciliation. Mm-hmm. But I had to separate myself, because the reality is that their perception of reality is diluted. In my opinion, they probably don't think that. And I'm not saying this, again, this is an attack or anything towards my parents. It's just the reality of the situation as I see it. And basically, because looking at the abuse and stuff, I just was never like able to have any kind of conversation with them about it, because the denial is so thick. I mean, I'm sure that like no parent wants to like this. I can imagine is, you know, incredibly difficult for any parent to face.
Yeah.
Right. And to deal with, especially if they have boatloads of their own trauma that they haven't dealt with, you know. And I understand now that like denial is actually a protective mechanism that the brain does by itself, you know, like.
Yeah.
Until somebody's actually ready to, and my mother said that to me on several occasions, like, you know, I'd say like, when are you going to face the truth? And she'd say things like, you know, it's just too painful. Or I'd say like, you know, if I ever give, you know, a testimony at a program or something, or if I ever, you know, talk about my story, like, are you going to come and listen to it? And she'd be like, no, it's too painful. And the reality is that when I hear that, it's like, she's saying to me, the way that it comes across to me is like, your reality and your truth is too painful. And so that it just like, it's just abandonment all over again. Right. It's and again, I don't think it's intentional. I think it's just coming from a place of brokenness and, you know, the consciousness that they're operating at. Right.
Yeah, like I'm not defending or nothing like that by saying or what I'm going to say is a lot of parents will do, which I've noticed, I've heard this many, many times over the years, I've dealing with this myself and been hearing from other participants. A lot of times, a lot of parents would just be in denial.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, too, which you've kind of pointed out already, which is very important people understand, too, is that if they've had their own experiences with this as well,
yeah,
that makes it, will make it even harder. It doesn't justify what you're talking
exactly.
about.
And
I'm not trying to do that, but this is really what happens. Now, I think with my own parents, for example, well, my father doesn't know. My father was an ass anyway, and he never was around. But my mother, she knew about him from a very, very young age.
Yeah.
I told her from a very young age, but nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
Right? It was like a blind eye. And I'm old school, and it was less talked about now than it is now.
Yeah.
Not that it's talked about readily today, but it's certainly a lot more on the table than it used to be.
Yeah.
And not that it's accepted or anything, but just the conversation is there, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm hoping and praying that in the future that gets better, but it's like our interview, like we're doing here today, that's going to change that.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing that I, you know, like I've come to understand, I actually had a spiritual experience. I've had lots of them, but I had one when I was promoting Love the Child in Me, and I felt like my higher power was saying, like, you know, was sort of revealing to me the inner child in the in my older half brother, in both my parents, in my two younger brothers, also in two of my father's siblings who he notified about the abuse, and they mm-hmm. also did nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in this moment, I was able to see the inner child in all the people sort of involved in this situation, either directly or indirectly. And I was able to have empathy. And actually, it was just this huge wave of forgiveness that came over me. And I don't look at forgiveness as like, you know, absolving anybody of like guilt. It's not for that moment for me. It wasn't for the other people.
Mm-hmm.
It was for myself. It mm-hmm. was for me being free.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I'll say too is it comes in waves, because complex post-traumatic stress disorder, in my experience and in my opinion, is by its very nature, it's very complex, and it's very, there's layers upon layers, layers upon layers. So I can toggle back and forth between, I absolutely forgive everybody, I'm ready, you know, to just leave it. And then, you know, the next day I just hit this pocket of like rage, or I hit this pocket of sadness or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. And the main thing though that I understand at a heart level is that none of this was done intentionally. Is that, you know, my older half brother, my parents, how they dealt with the situation, my younger brothers, how they've dealt with it, my father's two siblings, how they dealt with it, like I don't believe that any of it was done intentionally, and that they were just operating out of their own level of consciousness and their own coming from their own place of brokenness. And, you know, that's not like a get out of jail free card that I'm throwing there, but I've come to more of an understanding of the whole situation, you know, and I believe that there is possibility for reconciliation, in the future. But one of the other reasons why I talk about this, because when I went and saw Theo, like, for example, he was sexually abused by his junior hockey coach,
yeah.
right? So it wasn't a family member. So what I, and I'm not trying to compare the two. What I'm trying to say is that in my experience, that the sibling sexual abuse, because it's not like, like it's still there, you know, like in terms of, it's just so hard to deal with, because how do you deal with it, right? And that's the thing, is like I basically had to stuff these feelings about this whole situation, and I had to continue to go to like family functions, family reunions, my little brother's wedding,
mm-hmm.
and they had a video of my older half brother on the screen. I had to stuff my emotions and my feelings for all of that. And I just got to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore, man. Like I'm not, like, I basically had to hide my truth to keep everybody else comfortable. Mm-hmm. Right. And to keep the idea of, you know, a good family kind of going, which, you know, the reality is that once I started to feel my feelings and speak my truth, I was basically, you know, like, that you're not part of the family anymore.
Alienated.
Right. I was basically kicked out.
Yeah. You're alienated. Yeah.
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 And that's the sad thing about this, is that, you know, I was a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then because I speak up for being a victim, then I'm re-victimized.
Yeah.
Right. And so the betrayal and the abandonment, it goes so deep. Like I've had a lot of times, a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of, it's not easy stuff, man. And, but I saw this one talk thing on YouTube where these people, they, I don't know if they're health professionals or whatever, but they speak about child sexual abuse, and they had a video specifically on child sibling sexual abuse. And they talked specifically about, well, what does the parents do in this situation? What do the other siblings do in this situation? What does the victim do in this mm-hmm. situation? And they had a similar conversation to what we're having right now. And the reality is, there's just, circling back to what I was saying about Theo's experience and his story, is like, that's more of a common form that's kind of sensationalized, or like, that's more, not sensationalized, but, well, sibling sexual abuse just seems to be like it's not in the forefront as other kinds of abuse, like people getting abused by a priest or a hockey coach.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't want people to twist my words and you know, stuff like that. Like I'm not trying to split hairs. I'm just trying to shed some light on sibling sexual abuse and how it's very, very difficult to deal with, because that I still have those questions. Like, how can I be a part of my family with this that happened? If people aren't willing to look at it, right? Other people that were involved, like i.e. my parents and younger siblings indirectly, right?
As I understand it, like I hear about this lots and lots of times, and as far as I understand my recollection and then talking with other people like therapists and listening to other psychologists talk about this, and in reality, yes, sibling abuse does happen, and if it happens between a certain age, like till maybe to 11 or 12, you know, after that, they're a grown up. I hate using the word should, but they should know better by then.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So there's no excuse after that. There's no reason. You can think on your own. You're like a young man or a young woman.
Yeah.
And you should know better.
Yeah. And that's the thing is my older half brother was 13 when it started.
When it started.
13 when it stopped.
Yeah.
The crazy part about this is that the guy that was convicted in Australia, before he got convicted, right after we got to Canada, this is something my dad told me a couple years ago. That guy actually showed up on our doorstep just out of the blue. And my dad said, you know, he had this hobby of taking photos of trains and just said, oh, I just, you know, came to Canada and just was in the neighborhood. So thought I'd stop by. I think personally that was the trigger that set my brother off. And I strongly suspect that he was coming there to ensure that my brother would stay quiet.
Yeah.
That he wouldn't, you know. And so the whole story is, I mean, it's like something out of a movie, to be honest. When I look back at it, at all of it, and
what a hell of a horror movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, and the crazy part about this is. Actually, I went to college, Sheridan College for Media Arts, and one of the first classes that I had, they showed this movie of this young man that his sister had committed suicide, and this was all about this big family reunion. And finally, when it got to the time for him to do his speech, he told in explicit details what his father had done to him and his sister. And I can just remember it was like, I still wasn't facing my reality, but I remember it just triggered me so bad. I remember in that class being triggered, having panic attacks, anxiety attack. I had to leave because I just couldn't watch it. But I just never told anybody, right? But it was almost like my story. But, you know, so this guy was basically saying, like, you know, to his father and his family that the reason his sister killed herself is because the father was sexually abusing him and his sister. And the mother actually walked in on the abuse happening. And he talked about all of this quite candidly and said, hey, you know, mother, remember when this happened? And the rest of the family, like the whole scene is it's very triggering, but it's also very eye-opening. And then, you know, and then, so I can remember, going back and trying to find out what movie that was a couple years ago as I've been processing my stuff, right? And I remember watching, I found it and I watched it again, and I don't know, I kind of had this thought of like, you know, if I hadn't gone public, that maybe that's what I was going to do. I was going to go to a family reunion, and I was just at one point going to ding the cups and get up in front of everybody and just say the truth, right? Luckily, that didn't happen, because I think that would have been pretty bad. I don't think I would have been able to handle that, like, in a very, you know, emotionally grounded way at all. But, you know, those are the kind of places where the sense of injustice would take my mind, you know. And
can I go back and ask you a question about
absolutely
you talked about forgiveness towards yourself. Now,
yes.
This is a huge thing amongst all of us that have been through this experience.
Yeah.
And for myself, well, forgiveness, well, I mean, you know, from my handle from Twitter that I'm called Unforgiven.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And essentially I was and have been pretty much all my life. I've been just a mean, nasty old, I'm a mean, nasty old goat now, but
yeah.
or bastard, I should say. But nevertheless, forgiveness was never a thing. I mean, and as I stand now, and even to this day, well, it was a hard time to learn to forgive myself. Well,
yeah.
I had almost 50 years of hating myself.
Yeah.
Wanting to die, you name it. I was, you know, I just hated the world, everything.
Yeah,
right?
Me too. Yeah.
And when I did finally start to find forgiveness towards myself, which was a really, really hard thing to do, I had to work really, really hard. It took me a long time to realize that I'm a human being, and you know, why should I be carrying all this guilt and shame that's been instilled in me since I was a child? And I was abused by multiple people. I was abused from a man and a woman, and like I was in my own little circuit,
right?
For quite a few years.
Yeah.
You know, from home to home, and I was abused here, and I was abused there, and it was like, holy Jesus, well, what? You know, I always thought, well, you know, I always believed that I had a label on my forehead. You know, come pick, you know, come, I'm here.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I even have a younger brother.
Yeah.
He went through the same experience, but he took his own life.
Yeah.
From the same experience.
Sorry.
I mean, I'm only throwing this in because saying this because, well, first off, we're men talking right here, right now, and a lot of men don't talk like this to the level that we're talking. So it's very important for other people that are listening, especially other men, to know that, well, one, you're not alone, obviously, and two, you can talk about this, and we're not shaming one another here or anything like that. We're talking about it open and candidly. And you know, we actually care, right? So it's very, very important. There is people out there that do care, but what I'm getting at, I kind of sidetracked her a little bit when I talk about Unforgiven and about forgiveness.
Yeah.
Well, forgiving myself is one of the hardest things. And I still struggle with that even to this day after I say, well, I found forgiveness for myself, but I struck really, really, really hard. And I have to fight really, really hard to keep that belief that I'm a decent human being. And I wasn't that person that those people did to me.
Yeah.
Like with yourself, right? It's very, very hard to grasp that. And what I believe, and I mean, I could be wrong and somebody can correct me on it if they want to, but I think the longer you're stuck with it, the harder it is to say, just because you know it's wrong and you know it's a lie, to actually believe that it is a lie.
Yeah.
And that you weren't the problem.
Yeah.
In other words, you didn't create this.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I always believe that I created the problem.
Yeah,
so I had like a little sign on my forehead. So you believe that too as well?
I did too, yeah.
So what I'm curious though is with the forgiveness part, how did you find that little bit of – how did you start finding forgiveness in yourself? Which is – this is really important, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, I'm still on that journey like yourself. And I don't think I'm fully there, but I think just with a lot of the stuff I've read, therapists that I've talked to, you know, videos I've watched on trauma survivors, sexual abuse survivors, listening to Theo, reading his books, and actually my experience here at the Gatehouse as well, and all of that has helped me to have. To realize that it really wasn't my fault, and that I was just a little kid, and I was in a bad situation, and the hardest part for me though is when the abuse happened, my mother when she walked in on it. My mother basically, like, right away it stopped, and my mother sat us down or made us stand side by side and say, okay, you say sorry to you, you say I forgive you, now you say sorry, now you say I forgive you, now you both hug and go back to bed, and you know, don't do that again. And so my experience of forgiveness was totally messed up from that situation, right? Because I was made to believe that I was equally at fault in the situation as my elder half brother was, which is not true. I was the victim.
You're a child.
I was a little boy.
Yeah.
I was a child. Yeah, exactly. And I was manipulated and used and all that kind of stuff. And so it's been a long journey of just learning to forgive myself little bits at a time. And that's a good question. You know, I think that all the recovery that I've been pursuing,
mm-hmm.
like I've been on the road to recovery for 11 years now, and everything I've done to try to turn my life around and try to undo everything that was that I was taught and all of that, I think those are all acts of self-forgiveness.
So do you think the 12-step program helped you out as well, and to some degree?
Absolutely. Yeah. I won't be specific about which one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Anonymity and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, absolutely. You know, it absolutely changed my life, you know, and it's been a process of reparenting myself, of mm-hmm. learning how to do life, because really it wasn't just the abuse that was messed up for me, but it was the family and the household I was raised in was massively toxic and dysfunctional and abusive and neglectful. Pia Melody says that any parenting that is less than nurturing is abusive.
Mm.
So my situation was, it wasn't less than nurturing. It was way, way far from nurturing. So it wasn't just less than, right? And again, I don't want to say that to, you know, paint a brushstroke over my parents as these are evil people.
Mm.
What I'm saying is that's the reality of what the situation was. And I understand now today that they too had their own childhood trauma that they had not yet resolved. And I know that for a fact, because all through my childhood, I was told about how messed up, you know, their upbringing was. So it's just, I feel proud that I get to be a chain breaker and that I get to be a buck stopper and a whistleblower, and the buck stops here.
Mm-hmm.
It does not go any further. God willing, I don't have kids right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, but, if that's something that's in the cards for me, you know, I know that I'm going to be going into that a lot better equipped than my parents were going into it, you know? And yeah. So it's, the forgiveness process is self-forgiveness is a journey. But I think doing things like even coming here today, I think is an act of self-forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
you know, of saying that, and also like being in a place where I can speak candidly the truth about what happened, but also, you know, come from a place, somewhat of a place of forgiveness for the perpetrator and those who enabled the perpetrator's behavior, to not face consequences, you know?
Now I've listened to your song, Love the Child in Me, a few times now.
Yeah.
And I listened to it all the way through. I mean, I can't actually wait to play this. Actually, I'm kind of hoping we can play this very, very shortly.
Yeah.
And also people will give people an understanding where you're coming from as well, mm-hmm. because it's kind of like your life story there, is it not?
It is pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
My life story in about 4 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so well articulated. And that's why I was like, I had to listen to it a few times. It was just so well done.
Thank you.
And it just grabbed me, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It really did. It really, really grabbed me with how well you laid it out. And it's like the time frame is just absolutely perfect all the way through, right?
Thank
from
you.
From right to this day. So when did you record this?
Okay. I wrote this and I recorded this about 5 years ago. About
5 years ago.
What happened is I was reading a book called Male Survivor.
Yeah.
By Timothy L.
Yeah.
Sanders.
Yeah.
And I weeped through reading that book. And I just felt like, wouldn't it be awesome if there was a song like this, like basically this book summed up in a song, so that the way that the way that it tugged on my heartstrings when I read his book, that that would do the same thing for other survivors when they listen to my song. And I also had a guy that was managing me at the time, Jim Israel, and he was really encouraging. See, prior to this, I was doing, I kind of went from party rap to then trying to do Christian rap, and then realizing that's not me. And all those different forms, all those things that I was doing, like whether I was doing party rap or Christian rap, it was all from a place of codependency. I was trying to please other people. Mm-hmm. I wasn't being myself. I wasn't being true to myself. And Love the Child in Me was the first song I ever wrote where I felt like I was being authentically myself. And Jim was encouraging me to write that way. And so, you know, he had me listening to some really powerful songs with great songwriting, great lyrics, very, what's the word? Controversial. And he said, man, just let it all out. Just speak your truth. And that's how the song came about. I remember recording it. I recorded it at Revelation Sound in Guelph, and he was there. Jim was there encouraging me. The guy who was engineering that, Brad Dugas, he was the first guy I ever recorded with on a professional studio mic in a somewhat professional studio. And so it was really special, but it was really challenging. It was the hardest song I ever performed, like in terms of recording it. And is because I knew as soon as I recorded this, like everything's going to change now. Everything's going to change. The dynamics between me and my family. I'm basically not going to have a family now because I'm speaking my truth. And because, and that's something I had to accept. And then it stayed on my computer for the next few years. I just never had the money to get it mixed professionally. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get it mixed at Metalworks Studios, which is the best studio in Canada, as it's rated in Canadian Music Week. There's all kind of big stars recording there in the same studio I was in, like Drake, Lil Wayne, Justin Bieber, a whole bunch of people, established artists. And I was like, that's where this song needs to get mixed. That's where this needs to get mastered. It needs to have that sound. So a friend of mine, Jack, he encouraged me to do a GoFundMe. And I was concerned about doing that because I just was afraid of what people would think, you know? Like, what's this guy looking for free handouts, and who does he think he is? And, I was also quite nervous about revealing that I'm doing a GoFundMe for a song about surviving child sexual abuse. But I just put the GoFundMe page together. I was honest. I just said, I haven't been able to earn a regular, like, traditional employment financial situation like most other people because my physical health, my emotional health, my mental health, my spiritual health, all of that, like, I was never able to gain and maintain any kind of employment because of all those things, because of all this abuse and stuff as it, you know, having CPTSD and having spondylolisthesis of the spine, having addictions, having all this, like, so I just was honest about that, and people stepped up, and they donated to the GoFundMe, and we raised $1,000, and went to Metalworks and got it done.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So it must be kind of, you know, aside from the negative side from it, it must also be very, very liberating and free for you, is it not?
It is. Yeah. It's very empowering. Mm-hmm. And I learned that's one of the main things that survivors need is their power back.
Their voice.
Their voice. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, the title of this thing, Healing the Voice Within, that's really what this whole process did for me and is doing for me still. You know, I can't tell you how many people have had that exact same response as what you said to me to what the song did to you, how it really pulled on your heartstrings and draws you in and
to relate to as well.
To relate to.
Yeah.
All kinds of survivors have said all kinds of amazing positive things about it and how it's helped them. And that to me is like that's my Juno Award. That's my Grammy Award. You know, mm-hmm. I don't need those awards. Like mm-hmm. that is an award in and of itself. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Funny thing is too about this song is that I've sent it to a couple other, couple top 40, you know, radio stations that have played my stuff before in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And this song just, they wouldn't play it.
Wouldn't play it.
They said it's doesn't.
Political, right?
Yeah, well they said it.
Not political, but controversial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Controversial. They said it didn't really line up with what their station's trying to play and stuff, and it's very competitive and this and that. I personally think it's because it's too controversial, it's too heavy, it's too taboo.
Yeah.
So I have to accept that it's got to kind of grow in an underground grassroots way.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm thrilled to be here doing this. I mean,
and this is a great way to do it too, because
exactly.
Like when we're done, like this is international, right? So everyone's going to hear it. It's fantastic. And I can't wait for my friends from around the world to hear this.
Yeah,
it's going to be awesome. They're really, 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 really going to dig it.
Yeah.
So, can we just go ahead and put that on now?
Let's do it.
Just so you give your, because I know we got some more stuff coming up, and then give your throat a bit of a break. So,
grab some water.
I'm going to put this on. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn my mic off so you don't hear us talking in the background. So, but I will be listening. So, folks, here we are. This is the Love the Child in Me
by Optics.
Optics.
I'm breaking the shame tonight. In shadows and in disguise. Yeah. I'm breaking the shame tonight of lies and pain I felt. And yo, I can't define the pain and I can't define the hurt. Maybe I'm a diamond that shines for hiding in the dirt. Every day feels like a shadow of dark. Heart cut, beaten up and shattered apart. Fragmented, broken into million pieces. A wounded inner child with the freakiest creatures. I'm there. I never made a plan though. I wanna live with a talk when you're manic 1 minute, depressed and next. And I don't trust you, don't take offense, I don't trust me. Scars in my life cut and wounded me so deep. I'm a little boy living in a grown man now. So I need to heal and make it out of this somehow. But I know that I will make it because I'm still alive. I was abused as a kid but didn't die to survive. I'm brand new. If I could only make it out of the dark to see how beautiful life could be, I could love the child in me, show him that we can both be free. Too many years have come by in shadows and in disguise. I'm breaking the chain tonight of lies and pain I've held inside. If I could only make it out of the dark to see how beautiful life could be, I could love the child in me, show him that
Okay, we're back. I'm sorry, but we were saying, did you want to finish that? Or?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So I was just telling Stuart that one of my tweets on my Twitter page recently was discovered by a Hollywood actor, director, producer by the name of Jonathan Scheck, who's also a male survivor. And he recently just did a campaign with Rain. And it's the Won't Stay Quiet campaign. And we've been, you know, he really liked my song, and he did a tweet with of him and his wife listening to the song in their house. And then at the end, he just said, you're not alone, brother. And we've been in contact since then and talking about the possibility of doing something with Love the Child and Me.
Awesome.
So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, let it happen.
There's nothing locked in yet, but it's just really cool to connect with other survivors, especially someone with that kind of status, you know, just to be able to, for him to be willing to talk to me and encourage me is really great.
So have you met any of the rappers doing the same thing anywhere?
I haven't met personally any other rappers, but I know Common is also a survivor.
Yeah.
That's the only one I can think of.
Yeah. Well, Jodi Ortega, the one I was telling you about, you can find her on TED Talks.
Okay.
And that was the very first year that I started doing the show, which was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And she's from Vancouver.
Okay.
And she came down, and she was good enough to come in. And I was talking to her through social media, actually on Twitter. Actually, wow. That's where I met her.
Okay.
And then she agreed to come on the show. So she talked about her story.
That's awesome.
And again, very similar situation to yours with her experience.
Yeah.
But that's what she did. She wrapped it out, and she did a great job. Awesome. Yeah. I still listen to it from time to time on TED Talk.
Yeah, I'm gonna check that out tonight.
Oh, yeah. And just so you, well, I wanted to mention it to you, so you know you're not the only one out there doing this.
Yeah, right? That's cool, man.
You know, and so this is very, very important. And whatever means or way you can do it, whether it's by singing rap or singing country or rock and roll or even spoken word, anyway, it really doesn't matter. As long as you're able to voice yourself, and it makes you feel good. And who the hell cares?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. It's,
yeah.
It's really what how it makes you feel.
Get your voice back.
Yeah, getting your voice back.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important, you know, and it's kind of like a lot of just all kinds of different ways of doing things. I mean, even from doing artwork, right? I mean, in a way, sometimes you can't voice, so you're going to put it on paper.
Yeah.
But it's still a way of expressing yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And you know, after not having a voice as long as I have, and I, you know, talk about, you know, being codependent on it, I went through that too as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, not having any boundaries, I had horrible, horrible boundaries.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now it's like, no, no, no.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a really hard thing to learn.
Yeah. It's tough for me too.
You know, but practice, right?
Yeah.
And as individual going through this healing experience, you realize that, yeah, I am a human being and I am worth more than what you think I am.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to come and look after your dogs on the weekend. Like, I have a life too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an example. I mean,
yeah.
I could have a greater example or a worse example, but
yeah,
that's just an example right there,
yeah,
right? You know, find that voice. And if it's by rapping or if it's by spoken word, as I've said, or any other means, then I say just go for it, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like me finding my voice. This is how, like, I've found my voice by doing this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've had it before, and I've done a lot of public speaking, and I've done all kinds of things now.
That's awesome.
But I've never done anything like this.
Yeah.
And never in my wildest dreams I ever thought I'd be sitting here talking about this right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'd much rather go on stage and talk about singing. I'd much rather go on stage and sing some crazy rock and roll or blues.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's kind of my gig, right, where I'm at. But I don't do too much singing nowadays. And if I did, I would have to cut back on some of my other habits. I'm still pretty winded, though. I've still got a pretty good wind, though.
Yeah.
What I do when I'm not doing that is I still run. So that's really has nothing to do with singing, but I have good wind anyway. But aside from that, what I'm getting at is just finding your voice. And what you've done is totally admirable. And all of that, but it's going to give a lot of other people hope. So
yeah.
I'm so grateful you came on here tonight to do this.
Thank you.
And show people, don't be afraid, right? I mean, it's easier said than done. I understand that. But, you know, just doing this, you know, it takes more than balls. I tell you, it does.
Yeah.
Right? And believing in yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And to me, this is strength that people need to see that,
yeah,
so they can help themselves.
Absolutely.
Right?
And the other thing too is that, you know, in this situation, I mean, the fact is that my older half brother is a survivor as well.
Yeah.
Right. And my mother is also a survivor. And my father, he doesn't know for sure or not. He kind of, you know, some trauma survivors can't remember, can't recall.
Not uncommon.
But he knows that he had a messed up childhood. Yeah. And so, you know, it's, I just, at the end of the day, I hope that there is healing for everybody involved. And I hope that this can, I believe there's a greater story unfolding here than just my story of healing. I believe that there is going to be a powerful, miraculous healing in the lives of everybody that I talked about tonight. And not only them, but other people, because how many other families are in situations like this that don't know how to deal with it? There needs to be people like in my situation where we deal with it and perhaps and can give hope to other families and stuff like that are dealing with it. Because the police officer that I did my report with, she said, Darren, you don't know how common this is. And I know she wasn't saying it to kind of minimize it, but that's how I felt. I felt like it doesn't matter if it's common. This has to be dealt with.
It's wrong.
This is not right. You know, it's, you know, it's not okay to just minimize it and be like, well, this happens to a lot of people, you know, and I'm not saying that's what the detective was saying to me. That's just how I kind of took it. I have so much, I hold that woman in so much high regard. She helped me to get my voice back. And actually she came up and congratulated me after I went public at the Theo conference. And she just said, I'm really proud of you. And so the whole process has been very challenging, but very, very, very cool too. Actually, the other day I was on my way to Toastmasters where I'm practicing my public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into her and a couple of the other officers, and they just stopped me and said, hello, how you doing? How's your work, you know, your advocacy going? And,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't tell them, but I was on my way to practice my public speaking skills. Yeah. At a Toastmasters meeting. So,
wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, public speaking, and we're talking about public speaking. I just love doing this. I love going out there and talking about this because nobody else wants to talk about this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just the fact that the people are sitting and listening to you talking about this. And, you know, I don't need to tell people the gory details and stuff. Just the fact that it happened and people get really messed up.
Yeah.
Like what we're talking about here, like people get really messed up and really messed up their lives. You know, everything from, you know, being alienated from your family, I can appreciate that because I have no family contact whatsoever.
Yeah.
I haven't in many, many, many years.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's sad and pathetic. And I've heard it from so many other people with very similar experiences. And even to this day, I still am. But, you know, just finding your voice and being able to talk about it. And I really don't give a damn anymore what anybody thinks.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you shame me all you want. You can't shame me. I've already been shamed.
Yeah.
You know, you can't take something that's, well, I've stolen back basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you can't take it away from me. So.
Yeah.
I'm very firmly believe that doing like what we're doing is very, very important. And now that you've like yourself, you've put it into rap. Now the younger generation, I guess this is what I'm getting at is the younger generation is going to listen to this. Right. I've had the pleasure of talking about public speaking. And that's what I was getting at too as well. I had the pleasure, not just at our conferences, but in the colleges, universities as well. I've had the pleasure of, Art Lockhart, his professor, he's retired now. I've had the pleasure of speaking in his classes.
Oh, wow.
In the social justice program.
Yeah.
So, to me, this is very, very important. This is where it starts. It starts with our youth.
Yeah.
So just the fact that you've done this and you've wrapped it, well, that means the younger generation are going to listen to that. Don't get me wrong. Some of the older generation are going to listen to it as well. Like, I like it. Like that. I think it's brilliant. I really think it's brilliant.
Thanks,
you know, it's not just, you know, like I'm going to, well, I won't need to get into that, but it's, you know, it's so uplifting and it's you know, and it's a really catchy tune too. It's not just negative.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a catchy tune and you listen to the whole thing. Like
I
couldn't take my ear away from it when I first started hearing it. I heard it again now. So
it's funny you mentioned that because I said on my website recently when
plug your website too, by the way.
Well,
please.
Yeah, opticsofficial.com. All my social media handles are there as well. But Robert White is an author I hooked up with to help write my bio.
Mm-hmm.
And he quoted me at the end of the bio where I say, if I had heard a song like Love the Child in Me when I was 15, that could have changed the whole course of my life. So what you're saying now about, you know, the youth hearing this kind of song, that's what I'm hoping, that perhaps there's some 15-year-old young boy out there just like I was.
Just not talking about it.
And he doesn't know how to you know, and here's Love the Child in Me. And maybe that gives him some hope and courage to, you know, him or her,
yeah.
Or them,
yeah.
to come forward and to speak up, you know, like speak your truth.
You know, and I firmly believe too, that now, now this is being talked about more and more openly, not that it's far from being what it could be or should be, but, the fact that it's neat to see, like, even in the house, I look at the people coming in, for example, like a lot of, it's usually when I came here, it was mostly over 30 or mostly over 40. Now I'm seeing right down younger than that.
Oh, well.
So younger people are coming out and talking about it, which is really good, because the sooner they start dealing with this,
yeah,
the less messed up their life's going to be.
Exactly.
Right? I'm not saying it won't be messed up. I can't promise you any of that stuff. I'm not promising any of that stuff.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that if you talk about it at a younger age, I really firmly believe that you're not going to be as messed up as you would have been, like myself.
Yeah, or me. Yeah.
Or exactly. Like,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to go down the cocaine train. You could find another way, right?
Exactly.
You know, or that last bottle of Jack I had. You know, you don't have to do that. You could find another way.
Yeah.
And people do care.
Yeah.
And want to listen.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so that's why I think it's very, very empowering. So what do you see for the future now for yourself?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that myself. And just the thing is, with the music industry, you just never know, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And but what I see is I am writing a bunch of songs. I have a whole stack of songs ready to be recorded. I've already started the process of recording some new material. And basically what I'm trying to do right now is record enough material to put out either a debut album, so an LP,
mm-hmm.
or a debut album, which will be an EP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either going to be all an LP or it's going to be an EP and then an LP.
Mm-hmm.
And the EP will just be like four songs, and then
yeah.
the LP will be like 12 tracks.
Oh, yeah.
And then from there, just
20 LPs are back. I'm sorry, I just had to say that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of my generation.
So I just... you know, I see myself continuing to pursue my music, continuing to learn how to public speak more effectively. And I see myself touring as a public speaker / rapper, singer,
yeah.
songwriter.
Yeah.
And
awesome.
That's what I want to do. You know, I know I have a long way to go to get there. I have some physical health issues I need to address. So what I see for myself is I'm a work in progress, and I'm at the stage where I'm just preparing myself to get to the point where I can start to do performances or gigs or shows or
mm-hmm.
tours or however it plays out. I mean, I don't know how this is going to all work out. That's ultimately what I would like to do as a full-time career is and do all kinds of these all over the country and the world, you know, like interviews and shows and just speak my truth and help other survivors to find the courage to speak their truth. And you know, that's pretty much what I see for my future. And I'm 36, so I still have I think I still have a lot of tread on the tires. And I've been pursuing this professionally for 17 years. I put out 3 underground full-length albums, but I don't consider those to be my official album. I feel like those albums were all artist development,
mm-hmm.
and they were all helping me to find my voice. I feel like this Love the Child in Me is the first song for my official debut album, which will come out whenever it comes out as, you know, as I continue to pursue it. And, you know, it's not easy, right? Because I want to do it all properly, and it costs a lot of money to do
yes.
that. But I heard a song on the radio. My highest power speaks to me through songs, music, movies. And I heard this, I think it's George Harrison song the other day, and it says, he says in the lyrics, I got my mind set on you, and I
yeah.
felt like that's God saying that to me.
Yeah.
It's going to take time, a whole lot of precious time. It's going to take money, a whole lot of spending money
yeah.
to do it right,
right.
Child.
Yeah, child, yeah.
Right? So I feel like God's saying that to my little child, is saying like, just, you know, just be patient, just have fun with the process. So that's what I'm trying to do. And that's what I see in the future.
That's awesome. Totally awesome. Now, in the beginning of our conversation, we talked about it. Now maybe I can, would you like to do something where you're just going to just do whatever you're going to do?
Absolutely, man. I came prepared with some beats. I've been freestyling for 21 years and, I'm ready to drop some rhymes for you.
I'm really, really looking forward to this.
Yeah.
So whenever you're ready, you can go ahead.
All right.
Folks, listen to this.
See, start off with this one here. Can I bring the mic down a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, whatever you feel comfortable. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, it's Mr. Optics. I'm here to spit 3,000 drops. Logic on your dome when you're thinking about the words that I'm spraying outside of my mouth at the gatehouse in Toronto. I bring this pronto from Guelph to all across the globe, talking about recovery and healing when I'm dealing the real rhymes from inside of my mind. Every time I rhyme to the Black Star beat definition, I'm bringing the composition back to you. So listen to the way that I flow on the show with my man Stuart Thompson on the right, Optics on the left. When I be spitting my freestyles from under my breath and from in my lungs and through my tongue to the microphone, psychodome, twist it like a cyclone, bring it and I'm blowing it up like a volcano, and twisting it up like a tornado, bringing my flows, rocking the show, and yo, pretty soon it's gonna be the fourth annual Healing the Voice Within fundraiser. Yeah, I'm bringing these rhythm and rhymes back on the flow that I rock, a one-of-a-kind art exhibit that gives voice and healing to childhood sexual abuse survivors. I'm bringing the tide up, so check the way that I rise up with my rhymes, what, at the Gatehouse, Thursday, October 3rd, 2019, at the Liberty Grand, I stand on the microphone, I'm the man, yeah, from the little child from within, spitting these freestyles lyrically, and I spin on the track, bring it back like that, so check the way that I flow inside of Toronto, from G-U-L-E-P-H. Guelph is my home. I'm back to raise the stakes. Yeah, I'm here to give you all the truth as I'm spitting lyrics from inside of the microphone booth. Up inside the office, I drop this. It's Optics. I rock this. I was born in the tropics of Australia. Want a postcard, Amelia? And I'll give it a little signature that says, Optizzy, I'm back to rocking the hot, busy, the business of doing rap, hip hop, it don't stop. Tip top to Taylor, I rockin' the microphone. I'm like a yacht sailor as I'm sailing all over the beats and keeping it real. Yeah, I rhyme about healing, not gripping the steel. So let me flip the beat a minute and change it up. Okay, so we got another beat here.
Awesome.
Hope you guys are enjoying the freestyles. Yeah,
Liberty Grand 25, British Road, British Columbia Road. I'm about to explode on the microphone in the zone. Toronto, Ontario, M6K3C3. Yeah, I'm like C3PO every time I rock and I flow. Yo, it's Mr. O to the P to the T-I-K-Z. On the microphone, I'm not lazy and I'm not crazy no more. I'm in the zone and I'm rocking for sure. Yeah. On Lakeshore Boulevard, I bring it hard, I rip my cards, yeah, actually I bring it to the table and I show y'all all a full house, yeah, ouch, it's the way that I rock from the south to the north to the east to the west, yeah, representing, ticket $75, purchase at thegatehouse.org, yeah, I bring it freestyles back, open in the store, hitting rhymes out as I press record on this microphone, flowing swiftly, yeah. Props, I rock it up swiftly from 50-19-519. Every time I rhyme, I bring it and shine. Yeah, big up to guest speakers that are gonna be at this event. So let me just give a shout out a little bit right here. Detective Ann Mary Tupling, did I say that right?
Yeah.
Dr. Susan McKenzie, psychiatrist, and Leticia Gracia, MSW, RSW. Thank you to our sponsors, Full Circle Carpenters, Humber School of Social and Community Services, fourth annual Healing the Voice Within fundraiser, a one-of-a-kind art exhibit that gives voice and healing to childhood sexual abuse survivors.
sorry, I kind of losing my voice here. Thursday, October 3rd, 2019, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. And this is your boy Optics. You heard it here first, with a performance by Sean Punjab D Incorporated, Live Painters Entertainment Auctions. It's a night you don't want to miss. So I'm going to drop a little bit more freestyle for y'all and then pass the mic back over to my man Stuart. Hope you guys are liking the beats. Okay. Let's just go up right over here. Yeah. So thanks for tuning in to Personal Transformation. Yeah. Personal Transformation, the Gatehouse Station. I'm rocking rhymes for the entire nation. For Canada, rocking on the microphone, not amateur, professional. Yeah, spitting with stamina and endurance. Every time when I spit on this microphone, I spit with strength, like I'm a tank. Yeah, bringing the freestyles, y'all can take it to the bank. Check it out, I keep it real on the microphone, but not with the steel, but with the real deal, with the healing from inside, facing demons. Yeah, and bringing them to a crash collision with the higher power on the hour coming up. Yeah, when I be running up rhymes and stacks of flows, rhythm every time I spit freestyles, it's like it's 30 below, so ice cold, frostbitten. Yeah, it's like ice cold, it's like it was written, it's like the way that I flow is got people listening with the ears glued to the headphones. Yeah, I spit so clearly in your dome since back in the day when it was Sky Dome. Now it's the Rogers Center. Peace the Raptors. We captured the championship and I'm a champion, yes. And every time when I flow, I bring it back on the track like this. And I feel like I'm fading, but that's okay. These rhymes I'm bringing are straight amazing. Yo, the day's end is upon me, is upon us. So I'm about to jump off this microphone, pass it off back to Thompson. I'm rocking. This is Optics. You heard it here first. Dropping the freestyles. Check out opticsofficial.com and all the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, /Optics Official. And make sure you purchase a copy of Love the Child in Me on iTunes, on Spotify, all the digital audio platforms, which you can all find at my website, opticsofficial.com. Peace.
Awesome. Thank you.
There you go, folks. That's totally awesome. I'm so happy you did this.
Yeah, man.
Awesome, just totally awesome. Folks, I hope you really like this, especially for my folks well around the world that are listening. I know I have some real, well, I know I have some listeners out there that really like the rap, so especially in the UK.
yeah
so there's gonna be interesting to hear the responses after that. So
well, the freestyle is a little rusty, it's been a while, but that's the thing about freestyle is it's all off the top of the dome, and it's a lot of fun to do. So I had a great time.
A little challenging to do, too, because you got to ad-lib the whole thing, right?
Yeah, plus my voice has been starting to go towards the end of the show. So, yeah.
But that's totally awesome. So I'm hoping that I can maybe persuade you to come back again in the spring.
I'd love to.
And just to see where you're at and what you're doing. And maybe you have some new stuff which you might want to do. And
you can
free run the same way if you wish you choose to again. And also do promote the song as well. Again, as well, Love the Child in Me, which is very, very important. And is there anything you want to tell the world right now? You'd like to tell the world?
I would like to say to all the survivors out there that it wasn't your fault and you're not alone. Mm. And there is help out there. And that's pretty much it.
Well, thank you. You know,
I never cease to be amazed when I have a guest like you come in, and I'm kind of at awe right now, right? Just the whole evening, it was just it's just been absolutely fantastic. And it's really, really a great way to come back after the summer holidays, because I haven't done the show all summer. This is the first summer that I haven't done that. I mean, even I took a bit of a break this summer, because normally I was saying to one of the other people that work here at the Gatehouse that I haven't I usually like do one-on-ones in the summer, but I took the whole summer off.
Yeah,
not just part of it was because of my job, but normally I would go out of my way to come down here, but I actually took the summer off. So when we talk about boundaries and self-care.
Yeah,
this is an example of something I had to learn.
Right.
So I've been coming here since 2011. Well, that's the first break I've had since I've come in from been coming here from since 2011.
Yeah.
The actual break where I did nothing all summer.
Yeah.
So that was huge for me. So coming back and then doing this, wow.
Yeah.
All I have to say is wow. I mean, there's no really words to describe it, folks. We have to thank Darren for coming in here and forgive me, your website again. Would you mind plugging your website one more time?
Yeah, it's Optics Official. So that's OPTIKZOfficial.com.
Right on. Thank you, Darren. I'm broadcasting live with Darren here at the Gatehouse, the 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West in Toronto, or Old Etobicoke, as I always say. It's been fantastic. I've been back. I have some interesting, well, not just interesting, but some really good guests coming up in the future. We're going to get back in the nuts and bolts of things again here. We're going to be talking about personal development and healing and things that we go through, you know, everything from anger to boundaries, you know, to self-care, to, you know, being triggered, to being stuck. All those things we're going to talk about in the future. Addictions, that's what we're going to be talking about this year. So I'm going to have some people coming in, I'm going to have some therapists coming in, some other survivors as well, not just men, but women as well. We need to hear both sides. Basically, the more we talk, the more of us come out, it makes us stronger together.
Yeah.
And really what it is. And it also creates this enormous, network of connection of people getting to know one another.
Yeah.
And that's really, really important, because the more we talk about it, the more of us get together, the stronger the conversation will be. And this is where change starts, right? If we don't talk about it, nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
It's not going to change in our court systems. It's not going to change, basically society and their beliefs and which are really wrong in regards to this whole situation. Even from your story and mine and others that I've heard, we can't change anything unless we talk about it.
Yeah.
And, all I know is it's going to be a great year.
Yeah.
So, folks, stay tuned, and I will be back next week. I'm not sure if I'll be doing it from here at the Gatehouse or if I'll be doing it from home. Thank God I can do it from home, too, because I can do it there as well. All you need is a computer, and you're good to go. Folks, remember, self-care. Anybody who follows me on Twitter knows that I'm always talking about self-care and things I do for myself to take care of myself so I'm not so stressed and that kind of thing. Wait, you want to say something?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
As soon as you're done.
Oh, yeah. So, folks, you take care. Remember self-care. Have a good night. Thank you. Happy to be back. And we'll talk to you soon.
But one last thing I wanted to say.
Yeah.
So I have a YouTube channel. I don't have the official, handle for the YouTube channel yet. I actually need 15 more subscribers. So I just wanted to say to anybody listening, if you have YouTube, and if you like what I had to say tonight and you like Love the Child and Me and you want to support what I'm doing, please feel free to go to my YouTube channel, subscribe to my channel. And every person that subscribes until I hit 100 subscribers, I'm going to send a free copy of Love the Child and Me to. So when you subscribe, make sure you hit me up on social media, give me your email address, and I will email you directly a copy of the song.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Folks, have a good night. In fact, if I didn't do that, I'm going to make sure I do that myself. Thanks for pointing that out, Darren. Okay, folks, have a good night. We shall talk to you soon. There we go.
So does that